For those of you who are fully invested and are living off of your investments now, sorry. For those of you who are still in the accumulation phase and are still buying stocks for several years on out, congratulations! Money Machine, Show 73, first week of August. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyer, and I'm going to make this show kind of short because I realize nobody listens to podcasts in August. You're going to come back in September, and you're going to have all these episodes of Mad Money Machine to listen to, so I will make them short so that you can get caught up. Here we go. In this episode, we will talk about insecure millionaires. We'll talk about why rich kids don't stay rich. We'll see what Dennis Miller has to say about the subject. We'll talk soccer a little bit, and we'll begin our study this month on risk ease. The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Richard Nybald's Market Timer Newsletter. For only $399 a year, you can get all of his buy and sell signals to make you money in up and down markets. Oh, just kidding. Wanted to see if you were paying attention there. Of course, the Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Yes, really, truly. At IFA.com. Helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Invest and relax. Well, the heat index today in Leesburg, Virginia, Loudoun County, Northern Virginia, I heard was 106 degrees, and we are, I guess, in the beginning, the middle of a drought this summer. We have had virtually no rain since May, I guess it's been. Now, there has been one storm come through that I know of, but they don't amount to much, and the grass tells the tale. Some people in my neighborhood have been watering grass. Some people have in-ground sprinkler systems. Some people drag the hoses around. Me, early in the spring, I decided I'm going to let Mother Nature handle it this year, and it has taken its toll. We definitely have a yard full of straw this year. Hopefully it will come back the next time it rains. According to the commercial, soccer's time has come. If you've been watching any soccer this season, MLS soccer, you've been watching the Beckham game, for example. If you're listening to this show after August the 9th, then you'll already know whether David Beckham played in the DC United game or not. My neighbor next door is going to the game. We had a chance to get some tickets from them. As I understand it, it's sold out. But I declined it because, you know, I think you can actually watch it better on the ESPN High Definition channel that's coming on. It's going to be on ESPN HD. Crystal clear quality. And the last time I went to a DC United soccer game, we sat, about 10 or 20 rows away from the guy with the drum. And the guy with the drum, he might like soccer, but boy, let me tell you, he really loves the drum. They have these two big mallets, and he just sits there and pounds. Pum, 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 pum. The entire game long. And I wish I hadn't have noticed it. I might not have been so bothered by it, but about halfway through the game, I noticed, you know, this guy hasn't stopped drumming the entire game. And then from then on, it was ruined for me. And I think on the TV broadcast, they must turn down the volume on the crowd noise because you don't hear it as much, but you can tell that it's there if you listen for it. Well, I've seen one kid so far wearing a David Beckham official LA Galaxy jersey. I hear they have sold over 300,000 of these jerseys. And do you know that these jerseys, these aren't just t-shirts. These aren't $20, $25 t-shirts. These aren't $40 jerseys. These jerseys cost $80. Now, I like to be a fan and get caught up in the spirit of things as much as the next guy, but not for $80. Am I being cheap or am I being smart? I'll have a link in the show notes to an article my wife forwarded to me from the New York Times, August 5th. In Silicon Valley, millionaires who don't feel rich. The article by Gary Rivlin says, in Menlo Park, California, by almost any definition except his own and perhaps those of his neighbors here in Silicon Valley, Hal Steger has made it. Steger's 51, he's a self-described geek, has banked more than $2 million, has the $1.3 million house paid off. Their net worth being roughly $3.5 million places them in the top 2% of families in the United States. Yet, each day, Mr. Steger continues to toil in what his colleague calls the Silicon Valley salt mines, working as a marketing executive for technology startup companies, still striving for his big strike. Most mornings, he can be found at his desk by 7 o'clock. He typically works 12 hours a day and logs an extra 10 hours over the weekend. Mr. Steger says, I know people looking in from the outside will ask why someone like me keeps working so hard. But a few million doesn't go as far as it used to. Maybe in the 70s, a few million bucks meant lifestyles of the rich and famous or something, but not anymore. Well, if we look at this $3.5 million that Mr. Steger has, they say that $1.3 million of that is in his house. And of course, yeah, that's not liquid. I mean, you got to live someplace, right? And if you're living in Silicon Valley, like $1.3 million house probably isn't all that much. It does say it overlooks a bluff on the Pacific Ocean. So yeah, maybe it is all that much. So that leaves him with $2 million. He is not financially free yet. He doesn't have financial freedom yet because let's assume that he spends $100,000 a year, which is kind of a tight assumption for living in Silicon Valley. He needs $2.5 million. You remember 25 times your annual expenditure is about what you can estimate for financial freedom? He's not quite there yet. Another article I'll have in the show notes of this show from the Washington Post, I believe, July 30th. Why rich kids don't stay rich. Rich kids, we hear, have it all. Money, connections, top educations, cars, and clothes. For those who are part of what Warren Buffett calls the lucky sperm club, life is supposedly one long shopping trip and a no-limits ATM card. But what if it's not? What if growing up rich actually has disadvantages? And what if rich kids' penchant for spending and their lack of experience at earning catches up with them? And that unlimited ATM machine winds up empty. Well, turns out there's a wealth education camp designed to teach today's kids how to manage their money. The conclusion of the author is that despite all their supposed advantages, today's rich kids have grown up in such bubbles of privilege that they're not prepared for today's increasingly competitive job market. They don't make good investors, they don't compete well for the top jobs, and they're not hungry for success like kids who grow up in middle-class homes can be. Well, I think I've been thinking about this notion of happiness tied up with wealth. And I'm going to, in future shows, talk a little bit more about what does it take to be happy and how does that relate to a person's wealth. I haven't quite worked out the mathematical formula for this, but I'm getting close. And I'll let you know what it is. In fact, I was in the car one day. I popped out the cassette tape. The radio came on, and it was tuned to a station where it had the show, the Dennis Miller Talk Show on it. And I heard him say something like this. He said, thank goodness not everyone in the United States has everything they need, or we'd never get anything done. Now, this commercial. Well, I didn't catch the beginning of what he said, but I can only imagine that he was talking about motivation and all of the wealthy people in the United States of America. And what do you do once someone attains their financial freedom? How do you get them motivated to do the jobs that need to get done in the United States? According to this article in the New York Times, these People in Silicon Valley, they get millions of dollars. Some of the people they talk about here have net worth of $10 million, and they still work 60, 80 hours a week. A number of people make comments like, if you love what you do, then it's not work. The trick is finding something that you love to do that's somewhat rare that can also be leveraged to make some money. I mean, a lot of people can love making music, but how rare is that? Something that might require a little bit of specialized skill or talent. If you can learn to love to do it, and it makes money, it's a win-win situation. August is the eighth month, and the eighth step in the 12-step program for active investors is risk ease. And later in the month, I'm going to feature part of Mark Hebner's podcast on risk ease. I'd like to talk about Chapter 8 from his book, Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors. Chapter 8 is Risk Ease, and he asks, do you speak Risk Ease? Residents of China speak Chinese, citizens of Japan speak Japanese, lawyers speak legalese, and top-notch investment advisors, casino statisticians, and insurance underwriters speak Risk Ease. Risk Ease is the language that's used to discuss topics of risk, return, time, and correlation. Risk, return, and time are all intertwined. Higher exposure to the right risk factors leads to higher expected returns. The longer you hold a risky investment, the more likely you will obtain the long-term expected return. However, because of random drift, risk is very unpredictable in the short run. But it can be quantified far more accurately than gut feelings and intuition in the long run. For example, you can flip 10 heads in a row with a coin, but there's still a 50-50 chance that you will flip heads the next time and in the long run. Remember that if there is no risk, there is no reason that you can expect a higher return than treasury bills, which have paid an annualized return of 3.8% per year for the last 70 years, or just 0.5% over inflation. One of the ways to measure risk is by a technique called standard deviation. It's a statistical measure of the historical volatility of a stock, mutual fund, or portfolio, usually computed using a minimum of 36 monthly returns, 3 years. More specifically, it's a measure of the extent to which numbers are spread around their average. It also quantifies the uncertainty in a random variable, such as historical stock market returns. There's a figure in the book, figure 8-1, which explains standard deviation. It basically looks like a big hump, a graph with a big hump in the middle. One standard deviation away from the average in both directions on the horizontal axis accounts for approximately 68% of the annual returns in the time period. Two standard deviations away from the mean accounts for approximately 95% of the annual returns, and three standard deviations account for approximately 99% of the annual returns. And they say an investment like the index portfolio 90 is highly volatile. Figure 8-2 shows the annual returns of portfolio 90 over 35 years. And you can see there that this is also a hump-shaped graph. It's a histogram, little bars coming up. How many times did Portfolio 90 return 15% or 10% or 11% per year? And as it goes down to, you know, just 5% a year, there's very few times that it returned just 5% a year. Correspondingly, there's very few times that it returned 22% per year. Most of the time, it returned about 13 or 14% a year. And they compare that then with portfolio number 5, which is mostly in bonds. It has a very thin or narrow hump, very tall hump, but very narrow because most of the returns occur at about an expected return of about 8.5%. The standard deviation of portfolio 90 has been calculated to be 14.56%. The standard deviation of portfolio 5 has been calculated to be 3.29%. And Mark goes on in this book to say that based on the average return and standard deviation of long-term historic data, a probability distribution of future outcomes can be estimated. He's got figures in here that provide comparisons of more narrow histogram of monthly returns against the wider histogram of monthly returns. The portfolios with lower risk don't vary as widely, but also don't have the higher returns. And it all comes back to knowing how much risk can you assume? How much risk are you really capable of holding in your investments? The best way to find the answer to that is go to IFA.com and take their risk capacity survey. 25 questions long now. At the end, you'll be asked for your email address, and then you'll be given the best estimate of a portfolio of index funds to match your risk capacity. And they'll also give you a free ebook copy of this book that I'm talking about, Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. And you can see all these charts for yourself. If you've already taken the risk capacity survey a year or so ago, take it again. Take it once a year, every year, just to make sure that you're on track with your investments. Well, like I mentioned at the top, this is going to be a shortened podcast because I realize that nobody's listening to podcasts in August. And when you come back in September, you're going to have trouble catching up to it anyway. So have a great summer, everybody. I will see you again next week, but it'll be a short show also. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes hiding from the August heat and drought to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next week. Please visit our sponsor at IFA.com. Call me at 206-734-4763 or email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Check the website, madmoneymachine.com. In the checking out the competition segment this week, I'd like to feature a podcast that I've been listening to again recently after they've had some trouble with their feed. The show is called The Investing Revolution. I think I mentioned at one point that I had thought about changing the name of my show to something like The Investing Revolution, and I went and looked for it. Of course, these guys already had it. And that's how I found their show. A couple of guys about my age, as I understand it. I've forgotten their names, unfortunately. That's how long I've been listening to it. But they always have some good interview guests on their show. And now the feed is apparently working. You can go to their webpage, theinvestingrevolution.com, and eventually get to a place where you can copy the link and paste it into iTunes in order to subscribe to their show and get it. It's one that's worth listening to. I give it an 8 out of 10.